Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everybody. You're listening to Stop Child Abuse Now, Scan Radio, number 3042. This radio show, Stop Child Abuse Now, is brought to us by NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. NASCA is a nonprofit 501c3 organization involved with child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. And I'm going to read the mission statement of NASCA. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. My name is Annie Margis, and I'm one of your co-hosts this evening. I'm here along with Penelope from Washington and with Hank McGrath, who is our special co-host. Reverend McGrath is from Caroga Lake, New York. He's a child abuse survivor, an author, and a NASCA volunteer. Hank began life in a poor Irish family with four siblings in New York. Both parents were alcoholics. At 11, he was hustling to survive in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with bookies, pimps, and prostitutes. It was dangerous for a child alone. Eventually, he served time in the juvenile detention system and, as a young adult, in prison for crimes he committed. After decades of hard living and a few near-death situations, he began facing his childhood trauma, and by the 90s was happily married. When his beloved wife died from cancer in 2001, Hank promised her to fight for others on the issues of child abuse. Since then, he has worked with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children as a court advocate for youth and more. Today, Hank is a minister and is very active in his community. On these episodes, we welcome various co-hosts, survivor professionals who assist in fielding questions and lead a variety of topics suggested by our call-in participants. Their trauma-informed perspectives as survivor professionals will help them guide discussions on the issues of child abuse, trauma, and healthy human sexuality that spring from questions and topics brought to us from our listeners. everyone's invited to engage on tonight's show. And the way that you engage is to use your telephone, regular old phone, and call in. The phone number is 646-595-2118. I'll repeat that, 646-595-2118. And Penelope will say hello to you and get you started, and we would love to hear from you, hear your questions and your comments. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Reverend Hank McGrath, our special guest co-host.
Yes, and I'd like to say right off the bat, I just wrote the note. I'm not some guy that all of a sudden, not that I'm knocking it, turned to God and all of a sudden I saw light and my life changed. I never rehabilitated because, as with most, that's a fallacy for most people. As with most people who go through the similar type of lifestyle, if they survive, they've never been habilitated, so they can't be rehabilitated. You know what I mean? They just find ways to survive that fine line until they can finally make it, or they meet their destruction. That's how it works. You know what I mean, Annie?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Yes, I really like that. You can't be rehabilitated if you've never been habilitated in the beginning. Yeah.
It's a fact. It's excellent. Another liberal scam that's been going on for 50, 60, 70 years, you know? You know, when they started prisons, the concept actually was started by the Quakers. And they would put me in a cell and give me a Bible, put you in a cell and give you a Bible, and whoever believed in God first would generally get out, right? But what if Annie couldn't leave?
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what the cell, the concept of the cell, you're one with yourself. You know what I mean? But what if Annie couldn't read?
Uh-huh.
I guess you're doing 30 years, you know what I mean? So that game has caught up, and a lot of guys play that game, and, you know, I didn't like it too much, you know. So being real, you go down and smoke. You live the best life you can, but be honest and be truthful and, you know, be real, you know, about where you fit into life. I think that's important. I suggested today's topic to be empowering therapy, you know, therapy that empowers you. There's all kinds of therapy out there. And we look forward to somebody calling in soon who himself is a pioneer of various kinds of therapy. And he's working with men who suffer child abuse and they suffer child sex abuse as well. And I told them a lot about NASCA and the resources that NASCA has to offer, because as you'll hear more later when he calls in, their men's group can actually use so many of the resources NASCA has. Right, Annie?
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to suggest, since I know it's – I love this because it's documented. It's like presenting a – motion to the court that the court accepts, and now it's court record. Well, it's the same thing with NASCA. When you have a theory or you did some research and you present it here, Annie gave the number for the show, it becomes research. It becomes information and resource we can use later that NASCA has, you know? And I'm studying two important facets. It has to do with children's rights and what are the weaknesses in the legal system that allegedly protects children and the alleged best interest of the child. One is, it's in the best interest of the child that the child knows the basic concepts of law. Now, I talked to a law professor that I study with and will soon have my degree, that just like the Bible has stories in it that kids can memorize, you know? Well, certain laws were created based on incidents that happened to certain people. And these stories can be presented to children to show them what's right, what's wrong, the approach of justice, and the using the court and the laws, and from the first grade all the way up. And I think that's vitally important. I think that's a weakness in our system, that we reserve law to only some shysters off to the side, and put our whole hope and heart into whether the shyster will win for us or not, when we ourselves can defend ourselves in the basic ways, you know. And that was the intent of laws, that we know the law. You know what I mean? That's weakness number one.
Mm-hmm.
The system doesn't want the children to know the law or to have rights. That's why no rights have been ratified. The Declaration of the Rights of the Child have not been ratified by the United States government. And I campaign for that to occur. The second weakness in the system is that they provide therapy, say they put a child in the abuser's custody, but the abuser is well liked by the court, and the other parent's saying, you shouldn't do that, this person's an abuser, serious psychological abuse, whatever. They don't want to hear it. Now this child is stuck in that secret abusive situation. Some of it ends up to be sexual abuse and stuff like that. And the child starts rebelling naturally, you know? If things are so bad, you can't take it anymore, you start rebelling, all right? And these children are taken to therapists, and the therapists are told a false narrative. It's because of the other parent, or it's because of this and that. And they start medicating the child, and they start, you know, giving therapy to the child on a false premise, on a false premise. Now, hear me out, everyone. The child is stuck there for 5, 6, 7 years getting therapy for false premise and is all of a sudden on medication even. They gain weight. They have all kinds of problems, low self-esteem, anxiety. Guess what it was created by? The system. The weakness of the system. You can bullcrap them. Whoever tells the best story wins. And so I've never heard of such a thing. This is terrible. This is like, say, Annie, you're a 30-year-old woman, right? And your husband beats you, right?
Twice that.
And you go to the police, okay, right? And you file for abuse, right? And you go to court, right? And the court sends you to therapy, so you get along better with your abuser. Have you ever heard of any such nonsense? But that is
exactly... Yeah, I have heard of that kind of...
Listen to what I'm saying. That's exactly what occurs to all children, because they have no rights. Nothing is done in the best interest of the child when children are little. It's done with a judge deciding which parent they like the most. I swear, it's that plain and simple. That's why they guide you and tell you, people do before you go to court, is don't talk too much emotional. You know, don't be too upset. Don't accuse the judge of corruption. Don't do this and that. And it shouldn't be that way. You see? So children, those two weaknesses, children have no knowledge of the aspect of justice, so they have no expectation for justice, number one. And number two, the systems are set up in regards to children, not women. Women, they tell the women, kick the man out, don't worry, the government will take care of you. But when it comes to children, we have all kinds of therapeutic programs. We want to experiment with the children. Even when they complain of abuse, it's because they see there's something wrong with them upstairs. Let's give her medication and all kinds of counseling so she gets along better with her mom or gets along better with her father, who's the actual abuser. And that is a major, those two things are major weaknesses in the child welfare system.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Annie?
I think it's a real sad situation for kids, and I think that the rights, is it a convention of rights, the Children's Convention of Rights, or how do you say it?
Yes,
Bill
that's
rights?
How the Declaration of the Rights of the Child.
Declaration, that's
yes.
It, the Declaration,
yes.
Children's Declaration of Rights. Why isn't that
yes.
on everyone's lips, you know? Why don't we have billboards saying, let's ratify this?
Yes, and that's what I'm campaigning for, and soon NASCA will be involved, and I'm going to invite NASCA to please be involved in this campaign. We're building it up, all right? But yes, that's true. Every single country you can imagine, including Russia, you know, these people ain't all that bad. They're just different people, you know what I mean? But Russia, African countries, every country has signed up to this, except for the United States, even though the U.S. helped write it. So it's needed. Here's why. Because, again, I remind everyone, when the federal government ratifies this, the rights, you know, the rights that blacks have, the rights that I have, the rights that you have, Annie, the senior citizen, we all have rights. Even the animals have rights. Finally, children will have established rights. It trickles down to the agencies, which now, depending on what agency you go to, they'll apply different policies because they're not restricted to respecting the child as rights. See what I mean? It's all fraudulent, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So once the federal government ratifies it, it trickles down to all the agencies as instruction, like wearing a mask for some terrible COVID, same kind of thing. And then things are more careful, you know? You have to be more careful when you're dealing with children because they have rights. And then the children realize they have rights. And I think they're the most important thing, more important than any other weird stuff that's being promoted today. Children are enslaved if they have no rights. Any human is not part of the structure of humanity if they have no rights. They're enslaved. We got to change that.
Mm-hmm. And is this the kind of thing that has to be passed state by state, like an amendment, or how would it get passed?
Oh, they wouldn't even touch. The states wouldn't touch this. They'd be blown apart. This ain't like the fraudulent abortion stuff. Once it's ratified, it becomes U.S. law. From the federal government, just like the Constitution, just like the Bill of Rights, just like all the other laws that were made to protect people.
Mm-hmm.
Children's rights, the rights of the child, becomes law. And so all
mm-hmm.
the states would do is change policies and procedures to apply these laws. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's rather quite easy. Here's the trick, ladies and gentlemen. It's political. Now look at me in the eyes, Annie. You can see my eyes. Are children
yeah.
part of politics? You know what I mean? They're the
they
seeds
are.
Of our future.
I mean, you
they have
it.
Nothing. They have nothing to do with it. If they can't vote, then it shouldn't be political.
Mm-hmm.
This, look at my books, the four books, Slave in Modern America, will keep building this, each and every book, to show you, all right, there is a correlation between what the African Americans suffered here in the United States and children. For some reason, systems need slaves. They just do. And the children
mm-hmm.
are slaves to the system, you see, because the system sets up the individual parents where they'll go along with it, you know, whatever the system says.
Okay.
Well, we're going to fight. We're going to change it. It's going to be quite easy. We don't have to do nothing drastic. We just got to propagate.
Yeah.
And you do gardening, Annie, right? You propagate
yes,
the
do.
Seeds. The
yes.
plants grow. And you enjoy the harvest.
Yes.
And by God, in our lifetime, mm-hmm. you will see this happen. They will ratify the Declaration of the Rights of the Child. And everybody type that mm-hmm. in. Declaration of the Rights of the Child. And when you check it out, you'll be scratching your head saying, why didn't the U.S. see when you ratify means make it part of our law? Why didn't the U.S.? This makes no sense. And you've got to remember, just not long ago, a little bit before we were born, it was the animal rights organization that reported the very first child abuse. It's only by convenience we have all these fake offices and everything having to do with children. You talk to a lot of CPS people and they'll go, our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do. We know they're an abuser. There's nothing we can do. You see? And children are dying left and right, or they end up coming on the show 20 years from now talking about what happened, really happened to them when they were children. And that's because they have no rights. And the system will be changed as soon as children have rights.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is something everybody should be getting behind.
Yes.
I think. Is there like a petition?
No, Annie.
Not a petition?
It's going to be easy. It's going to take a letter campaign. There's a whole style of how we're going to do it, Annie. All right? I had to release the books first. I had to build the website. I had to discuss things with a couple people. And, you know, it's only 2 months in the making. All right? And we'll be campaigning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'll be campaigning, reaching out to groups like NASCA and others to help us with this. And our problem right now is politics. We really can't make a move until after the elections. I remember one time I was on a hunger strike for bail reform, right? And bail reform, I mean, they were only giving released on own recognizance to rich people, a rich kid or a rich person, you see what I mean? And for poor people, well, you got to stay in jail. Guilty is, you know, it's like the Napoleonic rule. You're guilty till proven innocent, all right? Mm-hmm. And I went on a major hunger strike. I have the history of the longest hunger strike in the state of New York, all right? While I'm on a hunger strike, the Pope gets shot. Now, that's Murphy's Law, all right? So everything in the newspaper, everything in the news now is about the poor Pope. You know what I mean? My point meaning is there's certain periods of time you can make moves. There's a time for everything under the sun. You've heard that phrase, right?
Yes.
And the campaign for this, has to be after elections. Because we'll get lying politicians, oh, I'll do it. You know what I mean? What happens?
Mm-hmm.
It goes before the president. The president sends it before Congress. Congress ratifies the president's approval, which he already did. He sent it to Congress. That's all it takes. I'm surprised the Libs and the Dems didn't jump on that.
He already sent it to Congress?
No. I said this. That's the process.
Okay.
Yes. The president approves, let's do this. All right. It already went before Bush. He was about to do it, and he got voted out of office. All right. It already went to Reagan. All right. Voted out of office. Before they could get it going, they left office. You see what I mean? and it's never gone before them since, although Hillary Clinton had mentioned it. She got booted too, you know.
All right. Well, so, let's have some of our other listeners online contribute to our conversation. And I'm going to invite Penelope to have a word, if you want to, Penelope.
Oh, thank you, Annie. Well, Hank, I mean, I've been listening to your comments, and I do think that, you know, children, let's not underestimate them, especially with, they're pretty savvy with the internet and with getting information and with sharing information. I think children need to understand that they have rights. I had no idea when I was a young child growing up with an abusive household that I had any rights, none whatsoever. It didn't dawn on me until I started my recovery and started seeing a therapist. This was about 6 years ago. I was like 45 years old, did I realize that I actually had rights. You know, sometimes we get stuck in that childhood mindset. I mean, children that are born into abuse or that are groomed into abuse, they don't know that they have rights. And I think, you know, we need to educate. They need to know that they have rights, and they're pretty savvy. And I think we need to reach out to them. We need to find a way to educate them on the rights that they do have. I think we should underestimate the fact that a lot of kids just don't know what their rights are.
Well, they don't have any. Because it's not been established. It's not a matter of law. It's a matter of policies, depending on what agency you go to. Adults have rights. After you're 18 on, you have rights. But children have none. So you didn't miss anything there. When I talked to the professor, what we were talking about is putting together curriculum that will be taught in schools having to do with basic justice, philosophy of justice, just basic, from first grade on up, that it should be a normal thing to teach in schools, every school.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
Cool. Are there materials?
We got the resources. We have the resources, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just putting together the people, and most of us are being taught through this program. It's a law program called HowToWinInCourt.com. Write that down, How to Win in Court. And you study the basics of what the law is, basics, all right? And many of the students who progressed and already got their degrees and already got their certificate or whatever, we're getting a bunch of people together to put together curriculum, et cetera. So that's the plan for the next year and a half. So it's going to be cool. And it's just to make law, college of law, available to students from first grade on up. Adults and others who are fighting certain cases in court, you know, they want to learn to fight. They can't afford an attorney. Okay? Dr. Graves, Professor Graves is the teacher, HowToWinInCourt.com. Pretty cool,
I'll
right?
I'll check that out. Mm-hmm.
Great.
We do have another caller on the line, Hank, and that's Darlene in Tennessee. Darlene, would you... I'm sorry? Darlene, are you there? Darlene's not available right now, and that's okay.
Annie, and she was listening in, and she may contribute, but she was listening
I
in
see.
Mainly. So she's... She's listening,
okay,
but she may
no
or may
problem.
Not be able to contribute.
Yeah, I'm with my grandkids
okay.
and my son, and so it's kind of difficult. So I'm trying to give them time and listen to it at the same time. So.
Okay. Put you back on hold or on non-speaking. Thanks, Dorothy.
What a great accent. I love that stuff, Tennessee stuff, the accent there.
Yeah, that is wonderful. It looks like there's another caller coming on. Perhaps that is your guest. Penelope is answering.
Oh, that would be nice.
Line, so.
Good.
Yeah. So what's next in our discussion of the rights of children?
The excitement that Professor Eric Carlson might be here. That would be rather good.
Okay. That is Professor Eric Carlson indeed. All right. We'll just... Hello. Is this Dr. Eric Carlson with us?
Yes.
Hello. Good. This is Annie Margis, and I'm one of the hosts here tonight. And our special guest host is Hank McGrath, whom you know. And I'll turn it over to you, Hank, to talk with Dr. Carlson.
Yes, and I'd like to welcome Professor Eric Carlson and all the NASCA listeners. This is a great contact. This has been a friend of mine, and although he's modest, he's quite the pioneer on therapy. He's founder and director of BrainWise Solutions, which is an innovative therapeutic training and consultation practice that offers individual and group therapy. And his training has expanded into the field of therapeutic use of traditional plant medicines like ayahuasca. and of course, he facilitates a men's group in Hudson Valley, New York, the Therapeutic Men's Council, which in speaking and sharing with me, he told me that many of whom suffer child abuse and child sexual abuse. And I suggested NASCA, the resources at the website, NASCA.org, that his group could use any of the resources. They're free and amazing. So, Dr. Carlson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I just want to let you know how much I support the work that you guys are doing, raising, you know, bringing this issue from the dark out into the light so that, you know, we can as bring our humanity to this and do whatever we can to empower people to release themselves from the, you know, the traumas they've experienced as children or adults. You know?
Yeah. Now, your group, the Therapeutic Men's Council.
Right.
You have a concern that it's difficult for males to come forward with a lot of the abuse they suffered. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, in general, probably it's not easy for men to admit their vulnerabilities, to reveal secrets about things they may be ashamed about, things they've done or things that have been done to them. And yet, you know, all of us need safe places to go to where we can really talk about our successes, but also our challenges, our stories of failure, and still be supported and accepted and have people identify with that and say, I understand. And ultimately, those things can be reframed as opportunity for growth here. You know, what's the possibility this can take you into a new direction. And that's what I see in this men's council. I see, you know, men really, really meeting this need. And, you know, certainly the isolation of COVID that isolated many, many people, but including men that just, you know, they didn't have the opportunity to socialize or connect. So it's certainly filling the aftermath of that need that drove a lot of people into addictive behaviors and depression.
Right. Annie,
yes.
Ed, does anyone have any question you'd like to ask Professor Eric Carlson?
I can't think of one right off. Thank you. Penelope?
Yeah, this is Penelope. Well, I mean, I know that Hank referred to, you know, some of the therapeutic options. I don't want to be jumping too far ahead, but, you know, I think one of the things that we do talk a lot about on the shows, and, you know, now so we're, you know, we can't recommend one over another. It's everybody's individual journey, but we do talk about different, you know, treatment modalities that that works for us in our recovery, and so I'm very curious as to some of your thoughts on some of the treatment modalities that you've, you know, had a experience with and wish to share with me and with those who are listening.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that, you know, the basis of a lot of recovery from trauma is based in, you know, spiritual and mindfulness approaches where, you know, people understand the brain and understand the impact of trauma on the brain, which, you know, puts the brain into a heightened, you know, kind of fight, flight, freeze response and can make us be very fearful and anxious and misinterpret a lot of things. And so, you know, the basis of any good therapy is a safe, sacred setting, be it a therapist or a group or, you know, a spiritual center or a church or any of that. People have to find a safe, sacred place. And that's really, really important. What I'm really excited about, and I'm not necessarily advocating for this, but what I am very excited about is the research that's being conducted now over especially the last 20 years on the use of plant medicines in the treatment of addictions, post-traumatic stress disorder, obviously, which includes war experience as well as childhood and adult sexual and physical abuse. Depression, all of these things seem to have a very, very similar root if we look at it from the brain standpoint, as the brain is altered by trauma. And it creates a condition in the brain where we ruminate, where we're fearful, where we engage in sometimes addictive and compulsive behaviors. And the promise of the research being done on psychedelics, which includes, at least in this country, psilocybin and MDMA, where they've done a lot of controlled research studies, is that it seems to free the brain from this tyranny. And with the right kind of counseling and support in a very controlled setting, creates a condition where people can be freed up for this trauma. I mean, it's incredible the work they've done with survivors of post-traumatic stress disorder with MDMA. 80% of the people that come through this program, and it's not just using the medicine, it's also the incredible support of counselors, 80% of the people that come through this program no longer meet the criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. So this is a major breakthrough. And sometimes, you know, you may hear people kind of ringing the bell of the old, like, oh, well, LSD and people jumping off buildings. A lot of that's coming from the big pharmaceutical companies because these medicines do not have to be taken on a daily basis. They help people, and they're not bound to, you know, the tyranny of the pharmaceutical companies. So I think there's a lot of promise. I know we're going to be talking about this. We're going to have a whole half an hour on the show on Friday. We're going to go through some of the research, but there's a lot of promise. I'm actively involved in training and, you know, involved with a lot of the communities that are doing this work, including the MAPS Institute, which has been advocating for these approaches for the last 35-plus years and cutting through the red tape of the DEA and the FDA. So I see a lot of potential for this. It's going to be a very different mental health system in the next 5 or 10 years. Very, very different.
Great. You know, what the professor was talking about is on Friday at 2 o'clock at Blog Talk Radio, VOP Freedom Radio, we do a show called Alternatives for a Healthier Lifestyle, which the professor hosts. And we'll go a little more in-depth into medicinal plants and the use of it in therapy. So that's excellent, Professor Carlson. I really appreciate you calling in. And of course, it's always an honor. I love you, brother. You're a good guy.
I love you
too. What I wanted to ask you, I like to save time, Professor, as you know that, right? I cut corners. For your men's group, have you had an opportunity to go and look at the website at NASCA.org? I haven't.
Yeah, I would be glad to, and I will share that with my people. I mean, in this men's, you know, council, this therapeutic men's council, we have people from all different, you know, professions. We have people that build things. We have people that educate. We have mathematicians. We have professors. We have a whole range of different kinds of men, and it doesn't really matter what they do or where they're from. They've come together with a loving spirit to empower each other through this journey. I mean, the thing is that we all have difficult experiences. We all have successes. And if we're just all alone and isolated, you know, it's a pretty lonely existence. And the council is designed to bring people together and to validate and help provide support for all experiences. And that includes when people are successful. They need, like, a shout-out. Mm-hmm. They need a hug.
They need
a cheer. And they also need someone that has their back during the challenging and difficult times, which are obviously inevitable. I also just want to share that in the last year, in my own experiences, I've had two suicides with close people around my life, a best friend and my wife's ex-husband. Committed suicide. And these were educated people, but these were people that somehow fell between the cracks. And, you know, I'm not blaming the system, but what I'm saying is those experiences are very powerful and they affect so many others. And we have to keep opening up the opportunities for people to not be ashamed. One of the issues with both of these individuals is they felt some level of shame about telling people how distressed they were. And that should never happen in this country. We have these resources, and people should always feel that no matter how bad they feel, someone else will understand, and there are people that will love them and want to help them through this experience. Unfortunately, the suicide rate in this country is way, way, way too high, and we have to address this. And certainly people that are survivors of sexual abuse and physical trauma as children are at much higher risk for suicide. And we have to look this in the eye and face it. We really have to have the resources for people so that they don't fall in the cracks.
Beautiful. You know, now from this day forward, the group and you have all the resources you need from National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, brother. We love you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm honored. I'm honored to be on the show and to support your good work and all the work of people that are trying to make a difference to make this a better planet to live on. You know, we have to love each other. We have to work together. We don't always have to agree, but, you know, we have to support each other to do the best we can and to reach our potential. So I honor the work that you're doing, and I'm really very appreciative and grateful to be a part of it.
Thank you so much, brother. And I guess I'll see you on Friday, huh?
Okay. All right. I'm going to sign off now, and thank you so much for letting me participate tonight.
We're honored. Thank you.
Thanks, right, Dr. Annie? Carlson.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
What a great guy.
All right.
You know what I
thank
mean?
You for having him on.
And you know what was really cool? He was a professor for colleges for the State University of New York, right? And he had students under him. So can you imagine the effect he had on the students, the young youth? Very good. Very good stuff.
Yeah.
And we want... How come I can't say the name Penelope? Penelope.
Oh, that's okay.
Penelope.
Not that many people can say it correctly. Penelope.
Penelope. Penelope. Penelope. All right. Penelope, we did it.
Yes.
Okay. Yep, we got an accomplishment this evening and a great calling guest.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think his appearance was brief, but it was very impactful. And it is so sad, such a sad reality that there are so many people in the world and in this country who have been affected by, you know, childhood maltreatment, childhood abuse, childhood sexual abuse. And it is not elusive to anyone. It affects everyone. And we all know people who have been touched by it, you know, in a very tragic way. And you're right, what you said in the beginning of the show, you have absolutely got to get it out and to say it and to speak it and to find a safe place. And we know this, and we know that men in particular, it's harder for men. It's harder for men, that, like Dr. Eric Carlson said, to show their vulnerability and to speak of these things that have happened. But we need to continue what we're doing. We need to continue the dialogue. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, you brought about NASCA and NASCA's resources on the website, and I certainly know that Dr. Carlson will take a look at that website. One of the great opportunities that everyone has, and men as well, is to come on the show as a special guest and to tell their story. We've had a lot of special guests that have come in, men and women, but men that have come on and told their story for the first time. And NASCA gives these shows the platform to do that in a place where it's safe and there's a empathy from the host. We're all adult survivors of child abuse or sexual child abuse, and the panel members. So you're right. I mean, NASCA provides that as such a profound resource.
Yes.
And to me, when I came on, told my story for the first time to the world, it was on NASCA. I barely told anybody other than my therapist and my husband and a very, very small few close friends. That was such a huge leap in my recovery to actually speak it. So I just wanted to make some comments about, you know, Dr. Eric Carlson's, you know, remarks on just coming out and coming forward and speaking of it and the benefit of that versus the detriment of not. So,
yeah. Well, you want to know? Hey, can I give you some news? Let me give you guys some good news, all right? My 13-year-old daughter announced the other day to me, she said, "Daddy, I'm going to be a teacher, and I'm going to learn therapy and help children." And I just beamed pride. And then I stopped for a second and got all serious, and I go, "You're going to be a teacher, though?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Don't join the union." But it's wonderful. That is good news that's in her heart as a child. You know what I mean? In relation to anything she sees or goes through, you know? And, of course, when she gets a little older, she'll be 14 soon. As soon as she gets a little older, I'll you know, trick her into the NASCA resources. But, I could find no better resource. Even those that are listening, but they're silent, have been using these resources, you know? The work that the founder has done is just absolutely amazing. and I'm sure the challenges he faced throughout time has really, tested his choice, whether he'd move forward or not, or et cetera. You know, you can only guess. But all I can tell you is what Bill Murray created is a powerhouse. And again, there's a time and place for anything, for everything under the sun. There will be a time when this will be bigger than bigger because it's that important. And when I push for rights for the child, I'm thinking in terms of there'll be less callers, less users of the resources because we'll actually save the children. These things won't happen anymore. Humanity will develop correctly. And this is our goal, I would say. It's like I used to, when you sit in prison and say, right, and you wonder if all of a sudden they stopped building prisons, well, there'd be less guards and there'd be less inmates. You see what I mean? When people change, and humanity has to change now, it's gone too far. First thing where the change is really needed is in how we approach children.
I agree.
So this is a great show.
I was saying we had started speaking at the beginning about various forms of therapy, including plant therapy. And I wondered if you wanted to return to that topic.
Oh, well, you're very kind. I actually am a practitioner of NLP, linguistic programming, all right, which is cognitive theory. And that's the basic that's used for most everyone's therapy is a cognitive theory. But one of the human beings, Annie, have a natural thing in them that's therapeutic. And you want to know what that is?
Yes.
The need, the desire, and the ability to create friendship. It's a human nature, friendship. Everyone who's a friend is a therapist. Everyone who has somebody they care about is a therapist. Friendship. You know, the growth. You remember back in the days, like 30 years ago, there used to be, give them a hug. There used to be commercials about hugging and everything, right?
Yes.
Friendship is one of the most powerful. I mean, like my daughter, she's concerned about whether she's going to have the same friends when she gets older. Friendship is an innate characteristic in us, a desire to be friends and to have friends. And it all has to do with caring, sharing, and being, you know? And it's a natural thing. So everyone is a therapist because if they have friends, you know, if they make friends, if they develop themselves to be friends, that's an important thing. And that's what NASCA's got, the ability to be friends, to care, to have empathy and understand each other, you know? I think that
it's
basic
foundation.
It's easier
to understand.
Yes. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It is. I absolutely agree with you, Annie.
Thank you.
So, with a few minutes left, is anybody online?
We have 34 minutes.
Oh, 34 minutes? Oh.
Yes,
well,
we have 34 minutes. That's quite a lot. I'll give the phone number again. The area code is 646. 595-2118. And that is the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show phone number. Give us a call to ask a question or to make a comment or to share your story. And Penelope, would you like to contribute anything at this time?
Well, I guess I just wanted to thank, you know, Hank for actually that little nugget of information, which is what's just so essential about human connection, that we need it, you know, within us all. And it is a form, it's a therapeutic form of support, you know, that we all have inherently, and how much we need that connection. And that would make sense if you're, you know, you're raising children and tweens and teens. It's, you know, all that drama that goes on during those years. How devastating it is to kids, because of, you know, there is that essential need for friendship, and how I remember, you know, going way back, how tumultuous those friendships can be at that age, and I can't even imagine doing it now with the internet. So I think that that is just so important, which is, you know, another, I mean, I'm not here to plug NASCA, but I will, because NASCA is a community, and, you know, we say that, you know, there's no paperwork, you know, there's no, you know, registration. If you want to be a member of NASCA and part of what we call our NASCA family, that's it. All you have to do is express a desire, and you're part of NASCA, and you're part of the family, and there's this community, there's this connection, which is a very strong one, especially when you all have similar backgrounds in childhood abuse as adult survivors. So, but I think that, you know, what you shared, Hank, is so profound. And I think that, you know, to me also, the context of COVID and of being remote and of being isolated, and just the impact on both, you know, all of us, all different ages. And I don't think that we should minimize that as either. So I'm thinking about that now as, you know, as we've come out of COVID, and, you know, we're just starting to see the ramifications of that. I think you have to keep it top of mind and not minimize the impact that it has had on all of us and on our children. So those are the comments that I wanted to make.
Yeah, they're cool. And you're absolutely right. I was looking quickly because I was researching a particular kind of problem. There it is. Okay. If everyone listening could type in the computer right now, learned helplessness, very important, because it's an ailment that, especially after COVID, so many, millions and millions of people are going through. But it's also one of the elements that makes a child so vulnerable to abuse. Learned, L-E-A-R-N-E-D, helplessness. And I'm bringing up the link from Psychology Today, so I could read that off. And basically, it's why people just surrender. And the moment they begin surrendering, that's when the physical ailments and everything begin to occur, and their whole life goes down the drain. It's sort of like what the professor was talking about, how it affects your brain abuse. Well, when children are developing, the brain is still developing. And so the abuse affects the brain. Let me just give a description. Learned helplessness is a state that occurs after a person has experienced a very serious, stressful situation repeatedly. They come to believe that they are unable to control or change the situation, so they do not try, even when opportunities for change become available. Now, that's very interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. According to Psychology Today, learned helplessness occurs when an individual continuously, see, this is how the abuser uses, they psychologically abuse you, all right, faces a negative, uncontrollable situation and stops trying to change their circumstances even when they have the ability to do so. For example, a smoker may repeatedly try and fail to quit. He may feel frustrated and come to believe that nothing he does will help, and therefore he stops trying altogether. Another example is a child studies for a test. We talk about children, little children. Studies for a test, and they fail the test. This may have such an effect on them that they no longer study, that they feel low about themselves. Well, apply the same science to when you're psychologically abused. And the abuser wants to trap you as a child or in domestic violence, whether it be a male doing it to a female or a female doing it to a man. That's what they use, the power to make you learned helplessness. You become a slave to whatever's occurring. You can't change it. You can't stop it. You begin accepting it. But as your brain's developing, you might be developing the same character. And so as an adult, a lot of learned people suffering learned helplessness will become abusers themselves. That, for me, was hard to accept. I've saved people abused. I've been involved with people that are abused, and they got away from their abuser. And in so many cases, they returned back to the abuser, or they were the abuser themselves as well. What do you guys say to that? What do you guys think of that?
Well, excuse my little dog. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, Penelope.
Well, I think that is, you know, really interesting. And I've heard the term used, but I've never actually read the definition. And I think that there's a lot of, you know, I'm connecting some dots, not really, well, not only with myself, but with others that I've observed. I think the more that we educate ourselves on these things, we become aware of them, you know, the more we can actually help, reparent ourselves and address certain things. So I appreciate you bringing that to my attention. And I'm going to share this with a few people. I do like
that. Yeah, great. Learned helplessness is actually began as a very old study, actually, and it's part of, when you give therapy, it's part of cognitive theory. You know, you and I sitting there and somebody's explaining their situation, we are looking for the signs of learned helplessness. You know what I mean? And we already know that they, as a result, we have to eliminate the anxiety, not give them a pill, which is what they do with children. And we have to find therapeutic ways to help them redevelop that passive character that allows them to abuse themselves or be abusive or receive abuse. Learned helplessness. It goes deep inside us. It's a very dangerous thing. And it seems to be massive. Like in one of the shows, I stated, and I always state this, that, you know, 80% of the population will be sheep. That's what I'm talking about. Learned helplessness. They're looking for the government to lead them. They're looking for someone else to do for them. You know, there's nothing more annoying to me than that. Because everyone's a king and everyone's a queen. You know, you guys can go as far as you want to go. What is this? Bowing down to the king. You know, when you're the king. You know, I have that kind of concept, all right? Learned helplessness is a very cool thing to study because it's what creates apathy. It is so pertinent in our understanding of human character. Apathy is those people who don't vote, what do I care? You know, it's not going to make a difference. You know, that's learned helplessness right there. That came from years and years ago. And adults are saying that, you know, having to do with this. And you know what I'm saying? When I put together Neighborhoods Against Drugs, everybody said, great, was patting me on the back, right? They thought I was doing something for the addicted. The addicted already got what they need. You know what I mean? I'm talking about the neighbors, the families, the children that have to live in fear because of drug dealers. That's what Neighborhoods Against Drugs is. Next. You get what I mean? You see my approach? It's a tough love type approach. There's no room for apathy if you want to change. There's no room for the helplessness inside. We have to empower that. It's very hard to get rid of stuff that was put in us when we were little. Even if the parents died who were the abusers, you still got it in you. Learned helplessness. Very serious thing. Include this, guys, all right? That is the one element I used. See, I'm a activist minister. I am a reverend, but of a different kind. When you write about Jesus, he was a radical. All right? Hank is a radical. I look to change problems. I really don't care about the person. You can't when you're fighting problems. It's the problem. How do you empower the person? You know what I mean? Sometimes we can be too soft with people, and they'll continue. They just want the little attention. I want to eliminate the problem. All right? And that makes my approach a lot different than other people's approach, you know?
Excellent. All right, we still got 20 minutes, Hank.
Well, I can just keep going.
I'll get the phone number again.
And so
you
want to
keep
Penelope.
Going? Okay.
So can Penelope. I just can't get that name. Oh, my God. No disrespect, please. I'm sorry. All right?
Actually, you're not necessarily mispronouncing it because Penelope is the Greek pronunciation of Penelope. So you're kind of close.
I'm cool.
So you're cool.
All right.
I didn't know that.
I think you're the only
That's
person.
That's really neat.
Your husband married the only woman in the world named Penelope. There's no other. I've never met somebody with that name, you know?
That is so cool. Well, I'm glad that I'm the first one.
Yeah, right? Overcoming learned helplessness. Learned helplessness typically manifests as a lack of self-esteem, low motivation, a lack of persistence, the conviction of being inept, and ultimately failure. I'm not going to do that. What's the difference? Blah, blah, blah. It is more common for people who have experienced repeated traumatic events such as childhood neglect and abuse, or domestic violence. When we're helpless, we have no control over our lives. It may seem we do, but we really don't. Our actions are futile. And if I could throw that in, I want to throw a comment in that. There are scientists that actually lay out the strategy for politics. And for years, a particular party, I'm not going to mention it, people can just guess, they thrive on the helplessness of the population. So they would thrive on this. If everybody was empowered and gave the finger to the government, these people wouldn't know what to do in this particular party. So it's quite the situation to actually change people. I feel stuck and helpless in my relationship. What can I do? People who feel stuck in relationships sometimes give up. They're unable to improve or work on their relationship, and they're also unable to end it. Sometimes a partner can feel that they invested a lot in the union, and moving on does not feel right. Yet fixing the problems seems just as daunting. Instead, they slide into a state of helplessness. How can I learn to be less helpless? This is reading from the Psychology Today article. And when you type in learned helplessness, this is like the third or fourth article that comes up in Google. How can I learn to be less helpless? People can push back. See, push back. Or be Irish. People can push back against learned helplessness by practicing independence. Oh, my God. See, there comes learning about the law as a kid, knowing you have rights. See, all of a sudden, all right, from a young age and by cultivating resilience, self-worth, and self-compassion. That sounds like an Irish one to me. Engaging in activity that restores self-control can also be valuable. Now, what abusive parent wants their child to have self-control? For example, an elderly person who feels helpless in the aging process can engage in small exercises that they know will restore a sense of control, like going to the senior citizen center, finally communicating with that neighbor across the street, or different stuff like that. So learned helplessness actually affects senior citizens, you know, people of all ages, definitely used to create in children from abusive parents and adults. It's definitely something that basically needs to be studied by all of us, all parents, and all human beings, not to be helpless. If we're in the United States of America, you know what they propagate, the U.S. is all about freedom and liberty, independence. That spirit eliminates learned helplessness. It should be applied. How I apply it with my daughters is you're a Mick. You're Irish. So see, you can use your culture. Our cultures are all strong and they're all different. But I use my Irish culture because we have a history, a factual history of not having learned helplessness. Maybe we go overboard, but we certainly aren't helpless, you know? And anytime we're pushed up against by abuse or what other thing, we find ways to rebel, escape, and get away because we don't want to suffer helplessness. Who wants to experience helplessness? What do you girls say?
I know I've experienced helplessness, learned helplessness, I think, and I can see myself sitting there saying there is nothing I can do, I can't move, I'm completely helpless, and it being almost comforting to know it was hopeless. I was helpless and the situation was hopeless, and it just comforted me that I knew that.
Interesting. Interesting. Good shot. Yes, definitely. It becomes comforting. And you, this is how, you know, I scratch my head. Someone who suffered extreme abuse, I had a period of time in my life, I'd say a good 10, 15 years, where I kept rescuing people, especially women. And I'm amazed now that I look back and they return back. And it's basically because they were used to what they were going through. It's much better than redeveloping the character, being out there and vulnerable. Would you agree, Annie?
Yes. I mean, not better, but easier. I mean, that's why I didn't divorce for such a long, long time, because it was just easier to remain in a painful position that I know than to reach out to something I don't know. The unknown was scary. But I did it,
which
and it
goes,
was good.
Yes. Yes. Which goes to phase two of an abuser. Abuser will cut you off from all, you know, connections, family relations, friends, everything. But they make you helpless. And we're talking about parental or, you know, somebody in a domestic situation. But they will also include threats that will go in front of your mind when you think about being free, independent, and no longer helpless. And it's scary. It's scary, especially when you get, they berate you. You're no good. You're never going to be no good. Who the hell would want you? All these things, you know. What a sick way to live, right?
Yeah.
I mean, an abuser like that, you know? That's too bad. You know, they should have a
pill. I think the reason I was... I was just going to say, I think I became trained on how to listen to and take abuse by my abusive mother. She taught me to sit there and take it. And because if I ever tried to speak up, boy, I got it way worse. So
yes,
I think that happens to a lot of people. It's what they're trained in, you know, in childhood to put up with.
Yeah, that's right. And the repercussions, even if you don't see them, they're still bigger than taking that shot in the dark to change things.
Mm-hmm.
We got a task on our, in front of us, don't we, guys?
Yeah.
What a trip. The only time I was helpless was when I was chained up, cuffed, tied up, or something like that. But other than that, I'm lucky I never experienced the helplessness, you know? In that respect. And now, as a rebellious person, and you're fighting against the helplessness, see, once you're helpless, you're a victim. I never saw myself as a victim. I still don't see myself as a victim. Because that's surrender. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, what I was going to say earlier when I first brought up the topic, and everybody has their own beliefs, but look how my mind works, guys. I had a choice to propagate Christianity as it comes out of the book and as you see in church, correct? Correct. All right? I chose not to because of the helplessness of a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Not knocking anyone. It's too helpless for me. I'm a warlord. I have the blessings. God will bless me because I'm doing good for the good. And that's why I said I never rehabilitated because I never was rehabilitated, even to this day. All right? I spent years doing things to help people. You know what I mean? I mean, Robin Hood type things even, you know, stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. I mean, I could spend all night telling you guys stories, you know. But I just got older. And the design, fed by my spirit and soul, you know, has changed here and there. That's all. There's nothing. I never saw God. If I did, my mind would explode. I saw God. I don't see God. Right? I am looking at humanity, and that's a power. And that's supposed to be the goal of the United States of America, is to empower humanity. And that's the point with giving equal rights to everyone. And that's the point to children having rights. And that's the point to recognizing and holding our friends dear, because that's our first therapeutic psychologist is our friends, you know? Yeah, humanity has to advance. I think a lot of, not us guys, you know, but I think humans suck, you know? crybabies and not willing to fight for what's right and got to join groups and everybody hates each other. And, oh, my God, 66 years of watching this nonsense. When is people going to actually boost humanity? And it's things like what NASCA does that's attempting to do that, to heal. And guess what? The only way to heal is to help others. You do that by developing yourself, fixing yourself, healing yourself. If you keep wanting to be troubled and a victim, you might victimize others. We need to fix the problem. You know something? If everyone in the whole world needs a license to drive and they all go get a license, then why isn't it just as easy as everyone knows not to crack the shit out of the child, not to abuse a child, not to rape a child? All these things have to be taught and applied and be permanent across the board. It's easy as pie. It has to be learned rather than learned helplessness. You know what I mean? Rather than being an abuser.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people get arrested now for driving with no license. Very few. That's what I'm saying. If people accepted such simple things, like everyone is familiar with basic law as adults. We need to apply humanitarian law in our lives. It's not something that just belongs in the United Nations and used for African countries now and then and whatever, because they don't really use it for Ireland. And like they did deport the Irish here, but everyone else can come, you know? I'm just saying, humanitarian aspects are not actually used in our communication with each other in the United States. Mm. There has to be divisions, and I think that should end.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, according to my clock, we've got a little over 6 minutes left. Is there any summing up or other mention of an idea you'd like to put out there in these last few minutes?
Well, yes, that's right. I have a book. If you go to Amazon. Yeah, I keep forgetting. I'm just not a selfish person. You know what I mean? If you go to Amazon and you type in Slave in Modern America, - From the Eyes of a Child, my book will come up, a bio regarding me. And, of course, it's the first of a four-book series, Slave in Modern America series. And it's to show the actual life of a child, starting with extreme abuse in book two, which I'm working on now. Book one ends where I'm on the streets of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm 12 years old. And that's how book two starts. But it's to give a raw vision to folks of exactly from beginning to end what happens to this child as they progress through life to the present, because such records are not kept. Yeah, did you know that? There's no records of what happens to a runaway when they get older. There's no records of juveniles, people, you know, and stuff like this when they get older. Nobody follows this. There is so much advancement we need in social science. And my book and then the next three books will all show that and shed a serious light on why there's such high crime. They're all abused. Why? You know, there's so many children still missing today and enslaved. All about child abuse and child sex slavery. And all the way to the present day. And in the first book, it starts out with a quote from Bill Murray. Yeah. So Slave in Modern America, a very important quote from Bill Murray, matter of fact, which happens to be, when you read the quote, if you purchase the book, a dollar from each sale goes to National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I have a dollar earmarked to NASCA.org and to Operation Underground Railroad. Those three groups I support, and a dollar, which is $3, from each sale of the book will be split and sent to those organizations. So this is a great cause. We're working on ratifying the Declaration of the Rights of the Child as a campaign through each and every book. And I would thank everyone who purchases the book, Slave and Modern America, From the Eyes of a Child. Thank you, Annie.
Well, thank you. And I want you to know that right before this show began, I bought your book on Kindle. And so when the show closes, I'm going to settle down and read it. I'm really looking forward to that.
God bless you.
And
thank
we have
so
three minutes left. Thank you so much. Penelope, would you like to come back in and have anything to say here at the end?
I just want to say thank you, both Annie and Hank, for the great show tonight and the great discussion. I wrote down some notes. I learned a lot. I always do on these shows. That's what I love about NASCA and about these types of shows and this format. It's so informational, and it's just the open forum to ask questions. I think, you know, Hank covered a lot, and so that's what NASCA is all about, is just getting the information out there and providing resources. So thank you. It was just a great show.
If you buy
yeah,
my book,
thanks.
I'll memorize your name correctly.
Yeah.
I promise.
That is a promise.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
Okay, everybody.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Stop Child Abuse Now. Scan, radio show number 3042. All of our radio shows are archived, so you can go back and listen to them again. They're on the website, the NASCA website, and that is NAASCA.org. And that's NASCA.org, NAASCA. .org. And there's lots of other resources on that site as well. And thank you again to Penelope for helping with tonight's show, and to Reverend Hank McGrath for being our special co-host. And we'll take it out on our NASCA music.
Dawn will come. You will never know.